Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Richie Neal, the Iran framework, very controversial, very difficult for a lot of people to understand where they should be. Maybe you could give us a primer, as only you can do.
Well, I think that the issue here really is the role of the United States Senate in terms of the advise and consent clause of the Constitution. And clearly, I think where the dispute lies is in between those two words at the moment. I think what the president is suggesting is that he does not object to receiving any and all kinds of advice. I think that he is skeptical at the moment of seeking consent based upon what we have seen as sort of the instant opposition to anything that he says and does by the Republican Party. Now, I think that there might be a way here through what might be a series of what are known as King of the Hill amendments, or recently what are known as Queen of the Hill amendments, where parties can exercise a series of messaging moments and then in the end still allow for the president's prerogative, in this case, to conduct the bulk of foreign policy to prevail. Not to neglect for one moment the whole notion of what to advise and consent to a particular clause means. So I think that there is obviously a constitutional issue here. I think that in the next almost 60 days, there'll be a better chance here to have a moment to review precisely what is in the proposal. And to emphasize, incidentally, at this moment, it is but that, a proposal. I think the metaphor that the president chose in terms of closing on a new house is apt only because it does suggest that there are still a number of gradations or a number of steps to take as you get to the actual closing date. So there might well be flaws that the advice clause offers at this particular time by suggesting, why don't we try this, why don't we try that? And one of the big issues, to be quite candid, is going to be the whole issue of verification. And I think there is substantial criticism that may well be accurate about how we secure the cooperation from the Iranians on what might be known as spot inspections, for example. I think that's very important. And the Iranians at this stage clearly seem to object to the idea that these inspections could take place without substantial notice. So in that sense, I think that there is room to improve the agreement, understanding that at the moment we still aren't sure of what the actual agreement will end up looking like.
Is this a dangerous political issue for politicians?
It is. I think there's some quicksand that's involved here, obviously, because as much as we all love to say that I hate to say I told you so, we all really like to say I told you so. And I think that the danger here is that we want to make sure that the president, as he seeks what clearly would be the most substantial accomplishment in terms of foreign policy of his administration, is not too eager to get the deal cast in concrete when there may well be an opportunity for Congress to improve the legislation. But there's also another competing argument here, I think, that also makes some sense, and that is we don't want Congress meddling to the point of making sure there is no agreement when, if that is indeed the motive at the outset, the public should know it. I mean, we all would suggest clearly that for three decades, Iran has really been a renegade nation. They have exported terrorism. They have maimed and killed Americans where they thought there was an opportunity. And to acknowledge again, though, how strange foreign policy can be when now the Iranians and the Americans are fighting against ISIS in Iraq means that sometimes you don't get to choose your partners. And if you do get to choose them, you have sometimes to be very, I think, careful about the mission that you commonly embrace. So do I think it's desirable to get Iran back into the civilized notion of national responsibilities? Yes, I do. And at the same time, I think given their history, we want to be on guard that perhaps making a deal that they won't abide by is something that will not serve us well in the long term.
Richie Neal, I have so much respect for your understanding of all of this. I want to ask you a question. Do you think that there is a either growing or narrowing distance between the Ayatollahs and their population?
Well, I do, and I think it's a reminder of the danger always that theocracy plays in any nation's policy. And I think that the fact that in Iran you have a millennial generation that is obviously feeling the pain and the anguish of what has really been a very successful isolation on the part of other nations directed at Iran. And when you can see the other issue that has certainly played a role here, and which was not forecasted 3 years ago, and that's the dip in international oil prices, you can see that that isolation has really strangled Iran. And so there is an eagerness on the part, I think, of young people in Iran, or those who are prosperous, to engage further economic opportunity, only to have it checked to make sure that it squares with theological teachings. And I think that that's always very dangerous. And if you've heard me say many times, I think that the great gift of Jefferson and Madison in American history was to free us a bunch of that strife by separating religion from governance.
As long as you've brought that up, Richie Neal, let me pursue it for a moment. It is my impression, maybe incorrectly, that Madison Jefferson might have been very unhappy with what we see going on in the United States right now.
Well, I think that that's the case. I've always believed that one of the issues that we've largely been free of is theology. And as you recall, that Madison asks the famous question, if we're to have state-supported religion, which one? And if you recall, it was really Jefferson that prodded him to ask that question. And one of the stories that I frequently tell that I think is noteworthy is after Jefferson's death, when Monticello had really fallen into a grave state of disrepair, and the only way that Jefferson was able to survive his latter years was by really turning his books over to the Library of Congress, which became the basis of the Library of Congress, incidentally, that it was a Jewish family that purchased Monticello and gave it to the state of Virginia at the time and simply suggested, thanks, Mr. Jefferson, for religious liberty. And I think that those are the stories that we need to tell over and over again in America about freeing us from what oftentimes is, I think, religious intransigence. And when religious bearings creep into everyday governance, I think that we become more devoted to the notion of theology than we do to clear-headed economics and opportunity.
Is it getting worse?
I think that I've seen a big change, yes, in my political career. And I don't think that the Constitution suggests, for example, that we are free of religion. I think that what the suggestion of the Constitution and the framers really was that we ought to compartmentalize those sometimes competing interests and understand that nobody objects to free speech, but if you desire free speech, that it's much more enhanced through a representative democracy in the square of ideas. And I think, to be very frank, I think we need to adhere to that. And I think that when you consider what's about to happen in these presidential primaries, when you see the tilt of the presidential candidates, you're going to see, I think, a disproportionate amount of influence that comes from those who have to placate religious leaders in America.
Richie Neal, we love talking to you. I'm proud that you're my congressman. And one of these days I'm going to sign up and sit in your class.
Oh, thank you.
Because I know what a great teacher you are. Again, thank you so much. And when we come back the next time, I want to talk to you about presidential politics.
Thank you, Alan.